January 2013, a Georgia high school. A boy found dead, upside down inside a rolled-up gym mat. They called it an accident. But the bruises told a different story. The missing organs? Even louder. This isn't just a tale of one family's grief. It's a war cry against silence, cover-up, and injustice. I'm here to tell you the story they tried to bury. This is Mystery in a High School Gym, and it's time to unroll the truth. Welcome to the Murder Tape Chronicles audiobook. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Mystery in a High School Gym. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Mat. There are some moments in life that don't just haunt you. They hollow you out and plant themselves inside the emptiness, growing roots that tangle around every breath you take after. January 11th, 2013, was that moment for me. The day started like any other at Lowndes High School in Valdosta, Georgia. Students filed in with tired eyes and sagging backpacks. The air was thick with the usual high school noise. Sneakers squeaking across the polished floor, lockers slamming shut like punctuation marks to half-finished conversations, the rhythmic blare of the bell cracking through morning fog. But something was off. I didn't notice it at first. Maybe no one did. But by third period, it was there, hanging in the air like an electrical charge before a storm. Kendrick Lamar Johnson wasn't in class. Now, if you didn't know Kendrick, maybe that wouldn't have meant much. Just another teenager playing hooky, right? But those of us who knew him, really knew him, understood that Kendrick didn't miss school. He wasn't that kind of kid. Track star. Quiet storm. Always moving with purpose. He had this fire behind his eyes, like he was chasing something bigger than the rest of us could see. Missing a single day? Out of character. Missing half a day? Alarming. By lunchtime, his name was already circulating in whispers around the cafeteria. People were checking their phones, texting friends. Anyone seen Kendrick? He wasn't at homeroom. Did he go home sick? But there was no sign of him. His car was still in the parking lot. His books were still in his locker. It was like he had just disappeared, vanished into the folds of the school, swallowed whole by the very place we were supposed to feel safe. I remember texting him. I remember how it didn't deliver. I remember the knot in my stomach that twisted tighter with each hour that passed. Then the next day came, and with it, a discovery that changed everything. It was another student who found him. The gym wasn't even in use anymore, not for regular classes. Just an old wrestling space tucked in the back wing, mostly ignored, used for storage. But that day, a few kids were messing around, tossing balls, doing what teenagers do. That's when they noticed the smell. That's when someone saw a pair of sock-covered feet sticking out from a rolled-up mat. Rolled up. Vertical. Like a human scroll stuffed into a cardboard tube. I didn't see it happen. But word travels fast in high school. By the time the sirens showed up, everyone knew. Kendrick Johnson, 17 years old, black, brilliant, athletic, kind, was dead. Dead inside a fucking gym mat. The official story came quick. Quicker than anyone expected. They said it was an accident. Said Kendrick had probably dropped one of his shoes into the center of the mat and climbed in to retrieve it. They said he got stuck. Couldn't breathe. Died of positional asphyxia. That was it. Case closed. But from the second I heard that explanation, something inside me broke open. Not because it was sad, though God, it was heartbreaking, but because it was bullshit. You don't crawl headfirst into a 6-foot mat for a goddamn sneaker. You don't end up upside down unless someone puts you there. You don't just die in a school gym and go unnoticed for almost 24 hours unless someone lets you. And you sure as hell don't look like Kendrick did when he was found if it was just an accident. There were photos. I wish I could scrub them from my memory, but they're etched into the backs of my eyelids now. His face was unrecognizable, swollen beyond belief, darkened with blood, his eyes bulging from the pressure. Bruises. Cuts. And no shoes on his feet. Just socks. Like someone had stripped him before hiding his body. But the autopsy? The first one, at least. It said there were no signs of trauma. That his organs were too decomposed to examine properly. That his death was consistent with the story they fed us. Like someone pressed copy and paste on a fucking tragedy and moved on. But Kendrick's family didn't move on. His mother, Jackie, refused to accept what they were trying to sell us. She knew her son. Knew his habits. Knew his strength. And she knew, just knew, that something darker had happened. His father, Kenneth, echoed that fight. Together, they became a storm that wouldn't die, even when the town tried to shut its windows. They paid for a second autopsy, out of their own pockets. And what that report said, It shook me. It should have shaken the entire damn country. Blunt force trauma to the right side of the neck. Not positional asphyxia. Blunt. Force. Trauma. Let that sink in. The second autopsy said Kendrick had been struck, killed, and that the first report had either missed it or ignored it. And that's when everything really exploded. Social media lit up like a wildfire. TikToks, Facebook threads, YouTube documentaries, all dissecting every pixel of the grainy school surveillance footage. People were screaming about timestamps missing, about camera angles that didn't show key hallways, about footage jumping suddenly forward as if someone hit the skip button on the truth. And you know what? They were right. Some footage was missing. Some was corrupted. Some never existed at all, apparently. Convenient, isn't it? There were names thrown around. Accusations. Theories. A fight gone wrong. A jealous rival. Even whispers about someone connected to law enforcement. But none of it stuck. Every time someone tried to dig deeper, they ran into another wall. Another delay. Another shrug from officials who looked us in the eye and told us to move on. But we didn't. Because Kendrick wasn't just a statistic. He wasn't a moment. He was a person. A brother. A son. A friend. And if it could happen to him in the middle of a high school, on school property, surrounded by cameras and staff and students, then what the hell can't happen? The thing that kills me most? It's not just that Kendrick died. It's how they tried to erase him. How they made him a headline, then a footnote, then a memory. How they tried to stuff the truth down into a rolled-up mat and pretend it didn't exist. But it does exist. And I won't stop telling this story until everyone knows. Because the mat didn't just hold Kendrick. It held a secret. And someone somewhere still thinks they got away with murder. Chapter 2. Surveillance in Silence. They say the camera doesn't lie. But whoever said that never saw the tapes from Lowndes High School. After Kendrick's body was found, after the shock had barely settled in, after his parents finished screaming into the cold, merciless face of authority, they demanded answers. The first most obvious question was, what the hell happened inside that gym? So the school handed over the surveillance footage. That should have cleared everything up, right? Should have shown Kendrick walking in. Should have shown who came in after. Should have caught it all on tape. How he ended up inside that mat, how no one noticed. But when the family and their legal team finally got a hold of the tapes, it wasn't clarity they found. It was chaos. First of all, there were four cameras pointed in and around that gym. Four. One facing the entrance, two covering the bleachers, and another mounted up high with a wide angle of the entire floor. All state-funded, installed for student safety. But there were missing chunks of time. Hours unaccounted for. Black gaps where the timeline should have been seamless. Kendrick enters the gym. Sure, you see that. But then jump. Skip. Jump again. Like someone was flipping pages in a book and tearing out what they didn't want you to read. When those videos went public, the internet exploded. The raw footage was grainy as hell. Cheap angles, weird lighting, timestamp glitches. But people dissected every damn frame. Online sleuths turned bedrooms into command centers. Teenagers, moms, activists, even strangers across the globe hit pause, rewind, slow-mo. They hunted for clues like it was life or death. And what they found? It wasn't nothing. You could see Kendrick entering the gym around lunchtime on January 10th. He's wearing gym shorts, a white t-shirt, sneakers. He walks past the bleachers, calm, normal. No one behind him. And then nothing. No footage of him leaving. No one else following in after. Just that eerie, digital void where time is supposed to live. Then, hours later, the gym is locked up for the day. No sign of struggle. No cries for help. No witnesses. Just silence. The school claimed the cameras weren't working properly. Said the system recorded in 10-second intervals and only triggered with motion. Claimed the footage wasn't tampered with, it just overlapped or lagged. But come on, who the hell believes that? One of the tapes even jumped forward by nearly an hour. Right during the time Kendrick would have died. How convenient. We started calling it the glitch. But in my gut, I knew it wasn't a glitch. It was a choice. A deliberate silence. Someone made that footage disappear, like they were erasing fingerprints from glass. Kendrick's parents were furious. I remember watching his mother during the press conference, clutching a photo of her son like it was the only thing anchoring her to the earth. Her voice cracked, but she never broke. "They killed my baby," she said, choking back rage. "And they think they can cover it up like he don't matter. Like he's just some trash to sweep under the bleachers." That line stuck with me. Trash under the bleachers. because that's what it felt like the school, the police, the coroner, the sheriff, hell, the entire damn system was sweeping Kendrick away, sanitizing the scene, wiping him off the map. Let me tell you something else. This wasn't just about the footage. The lies went deeper. When Kendrick's body was exhumed for a second autopsy, months later, they discovered that his internal organs were missing. Gone. Heart. Lungs. Brain. Liver. All replaced with newspaper. Let me say that again. Fucking newspaper. The funeral home claimed they received him that way. The medical examiner said it wasn't their responsibility. Everyone passed the blame around like a goddamn game of hot potato. But you don't misplace a boy's heart. You don't accidentally remove his brain and fill him with paper like he's a piñata. That's not negligence. That's desecration. And it raises the question no one wanted to answer. What the hell were they hiding? What was in Kendrick's body that had to be taken? What kind of autopsy could possibly be trusted when the organs were missing? It was like they were trying to erase the very evidence of his suffering, gutting him of the proof. By this point, the Johnsons weren't alone. The country was watching. Protests began forming outside the school. Candlelight vigils lit up the streets. Hashtags started trending. Hashtag justice for KJ. Hashtag who killed Kendrick. Celebrities spoke up. Activists demanded answers. Black communities across the country echoed one collective cry. We've seen this before. Because this wasn't just about one boy in one town. This was about the way black deaths are explained away. The way black mothers are expected to swallow grief without answers. The way a young life can be turned into an accident the moment it becomes inconvenient for the white majority. I'd be lying if I said it didn't scare me. I was around Kendrick's age. I'd walked the same halls, sat in the same bleachers. But now I looked around at the teachers, the cops, the coaches, and I didn't see protectors. I saw people watching their backs, guarding their secrets, doing everything they could to keep this from blowing up any more than it already had. It was like we were trapped inside a pressure cooker, and the truth was the steam, screaming to be released. And then came the names, the rumors, the suspects, two boys, former classmates, one of them a known athlete, from a powerful family. People started talking, started connecting dots. Said there had been a fight in the past. Said Kendrick had crossed the wrong kid. Said the school had every reason to protect the ones they deemed valuable. But the sheriff? Denied it all. Said they had no reason to believe foul play occurred. Said the boys had alibis. Said this was nothing more than a tragic freak accident. But if that were true, if, then why keep the tapes hidden? Why embalm a boy with shredded paper? Why lie? I remember walking past the gym a few weeks later. It had reopened. Classes resumed. The floor was polished, the mats were stacked. Nothing left of what happened there, no memorial, no plaque, no acknowledgement. Just a building pretending it hadn't swallowed a boy whole. And that was the worst part. The pretending. The pretending that Kendrick just slipped and fell. That gravity killed him. That he wasn't murdered in a school hallway and buried in red tape. Because every lie they told, it wasn't just about covering up a death. It was about controlling the narrative of a life. Chapter 3, Buried Truths. Grief is loud in the beginning. It screams. It shakes. It crashes through your chest like a freight train of disbelief, rage, and unbearable sorrow. But the longer it lingers, the quieter it becomes. It doesn't go away. It just settles. It crawls into your bones and waits. Like mold in the walls of a house, it rots you slowly from the inside out. That's what it was like for us after Kendrick was buried. At first, there were cameras everywhere. Journalists staking out school board meetings. Activists marching with signs. Microphones shoved in faces. News vans crowding the streets. It felt like the world might finally give a damn. Like maybe, just maybe, someone would be held accountable. But then, like it always does, the media moved on. They stopped showing up to the rallies. The hashtags slowed down. The country found a newer tragedy to talk about. And here in Valdosta, we were left with silence again. A suffocating, damn near strategic silence that wrapped itself around Kendrick's name like a shroud. But not all of us forgot. Some of us couldn't. Because how do you move on when there's still blood on the floor and lies in the air? Kendrick's family, God, they didn't stop for a second. They turned their grief into fuel. They didn't just want justice, they needed it. His parents, Jackie and Kenneth, became full-time investigators, attorneys, activists, and warriors. Every single day they showed up with fire in their eyes, speaking at town halls, filing lawsuits, calling press conferences, demanding truth. They hired private investigators. They submitted open records requests. They fought for Kendrick like it was the only way to keep him alive. And maybe in a way it was, because this case, it had started to rot. The deeper you looked, the more it stank of something foul, something buried deep beneath layers of privilege, power, and protection. Let me tell you what I mean. There were rumors from the beginning, whispers about a fight between Kendrick and another student, a confrontation, something unresolved, a boy from a well-known family, father in law enforcement connections everywhere, someone who wouldn't go down easy if accused. And then came the names, two brothers, both athletes, both white, both with ties to people in positions that mattered. There were allegations that Kendrick had fought with one of them on the school bus months before his death. That tensions had built, that something could have gone down in that gym. But those leads, they went cold fast. The sheriff's department didn't press. The school denied anything happened. And the brothers? They lawyered up. One of them even transferred schools soon after. I remember looking at them in the hallway before everything changed, how they walked with their chests puffed, like they owned the damn place. After Kendrick died, they vanished. Not gone completely, but shielded. Untouchable. People said they had alibis, that the timeline cleared them. But if the footage was missing, if the timestamps were wrong, who the hell could trust the timeline? We started asking questions. Dangerous questions. Why weren't those boys interviewed thoroughly? Why did the school administration avoid the topic like it was radioactive? Why did no teacher remember seeing Kendrick that day? And most of all, why was the official narrative still clinging to the accident theory despite all this mounting contradiction? I sat with Kendrick's mother one evening during a community forum. The room was mostly empty, the way it had been lately. Interest was fading. People were tired of marching, tired of shouting into a void. But Jackie, she was still burning. She held up a photo of her son in that coffin. His face, bruised, bloated, battered beyond what you'd expect from someone who got stuck in a mat. Her voice was steady, but the pain beneath it cut like broken glass. "You tell me," she said, pointing to the photo, "how a boy gets these injuries from reaching for a damn shoe. You look me in the eye and tell me this was an accident. I dare you. No one could. No one fucking could." The Johnsons filed a $100 million wrongful death lawsuit, naming dozens of defendants, students, school officials, law enforcement. The media called it aggressive. Some called it reckless. But when the system refuses to investigate, what other choice do you have but to tear the whole thing down yourself? The court dismissed the case later, said there wasn't enough evidence. Evidence? We had missing tapes. We had missing organs. We had bruises, blood, and a goddamn newspaper stuffed inside a corpse. How much more did they need? The FBI eventually got involved. Federal investigators came in like heroes riding white horses, promising transparency, promising answers. For a moment, hope came back. Maybe now, with people from outside the state, we'd get somewhere. But that dragged on for 2 years. And when the findings came out, no charges, no criminal intent, no foul play. Case closed again, like they were trying to bury Kendrick twice. Let me tell you something. When you're black in America, you're not just grieving a death. You're grieving the death of justice. You're grieving the death of belief that the system was ever meant to protect you in the first place. You realize real quick that innocent until proven guilty doesn't apply when your skin is dark and your family is poor. Kendrick's case became a symbol, a wound that never healed. His name became a rallying cry, but also a warning. Because if the truth could be erased that easily in a public school, with cameras, with witnesses, with parents refusing to back down, then no one was safe. That's what kept me up at night. The silence of the school, the silence of the authorities, the silence of my own friends who didn't want to talk about it anymore, who said things like, "It's sad, but we'll never know," who shrugged like Kendrick was just another tragedy we were supposed to digest and forget. But I couldn't forget, because every time I closed my eyes, I saw that mat. I saw him inside it, and I saw the hands that put him there. Chapter 4, Pressure Points. Have you ever tried to scream underwater? That's what fighting for justice felt like. Every time we raised our voices, it was like the sound hit the surface and died there. Never heard, never felt, just bubbles and silence. People around us went back to their lives, drinking coffee, going to football games, scrolling their feeds. Meanwhile, Kendrick's mother was still waking up every day to the memory of a coffin packed with paper. Still kissing the empty air where her son used to stand. I'd never seen grief stretch this long. I'd never seen it harden into something unshakable. But that's what happened to the Johnson family. They didn't break. They sharpened. By the end of 2015, they were less a grieving family and more a movement. Jackie Johnson no longer spoke with trembling lips. She stared straight into cameras. She took reporters head on. "Y'all can call us crazy. Say we're reaching. But what we're reaching for is the truth. And you better believe, we'll damn well find it." Kenneth Johnson, Kendrick's father, began traveling across counties, speaking to churches, meeting with lawyers, pounding the pavement to keep his son's name alive. His voice always had this edge, like a man who'd swallowed too many betrayals and couldn't take another bite. "And me, I watched it all. Front row. Some days I felt like a coward, like I was doing nothing while they carried the world on their backs. Other days I tried to help, writing articles, helping their GoFundMe page, passing out flyers, arguing online with people who claimed Kendrick did it to himself. God, the trolls. They crawled out of every dark corner of the internet. Anonymous accounts calling Kendrick stupid for going into the mat. People blaming his parents, mocking their pain, calling them attention seekers or worse. Every lie repeated, amplified. He was playing hide and seek. He got stuck chasing a ball. He was high. It was a prank gone wrong. The stories changed daily, but the goal was always the same. Discredit, distract, derail. Even major networks started pulling back. No one wanted to touch it anymore. Too messy. Too much speculation. Too racially charged. The anchors who once said Kendrick's name on TV moved on to newer, shinier tragedies. But what they didn't realize is, when the news cameras leave, the story doesn't end. For the people living it, it gets worse. The Johnsons began filing more lawsuits. They sued 38 individuals, yes, 38, including the school superintendent, the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office, and even the FBI agents who handled the case. The accusation was clear: cover-up. The theory? That Kendrick was killed by a student or students and protected by a network of adults with too much to lose. It wasn't just about one boy anymore. It was about systems, institutions, entire pillars of power. They claimed false reports, mishandled evidence, destroyed footage, tampered timelines, and every time they were met with dismissal. No concrete proof. Unsubstantiated. Insufficient merit. The court tossed the lawsuits out. Still, the Johnsons filed appeals. Then in 2018, something happened that reignited the fire. A new sheriff was elected, Ashley Polk, a no-nonsense old-school lawman with a deep southern drawl and a chip on his shoulder. People said he was different, said he might finally bring transparency. So the Johnsons pleaded with him, reopen the case. Please, just look at the evidence with fresh eyes. And for the first time in years, someone listened. Sheriff Polk agreed to re-examine the entire investigation. Over 17 boxes of evidence were handed over. 17. It felt like hope. I remember the moment vividly. It was the first time I'd seen Jackie Johnson smile in what felt like a decade. A real smile, not relief, not victory, but possibility. That maybe this time, someone would see. That maybe, just maybe, Kendrick would finally be lifted out of that damn mat in the public's mind and shown for what he really was. A victim, not a mistake. I wanted to believe it. We all did. But the pressure started building again. Sheriff Polk went quiet for a long time, months. And the Johnsons waited. The community waited. All of us clung to headlines like lifelines. The rumor mill spun again. Whispers that new forensic evidence had been discovered. That sealed interviews were being reviewed. That law enforcement officers who once shrugged were now sweating. But there was another kind of pressure too. The kind no one talks about. See, when you stand up to power in a small southern town, you don't just risk being ignored. You risk being targeted. The Johnsons' home was vandalized more than once. They received threats. Racist messages. Harassment. Their other children were followed, harassed, alienated in school. The price of their fight kept getting higher, and still, they paid it. I once asked Jackie if she ever thought of stopping, just to rest. She looked me dead in the eyes and said, "You rest when you bury a child the right way." I haven't done that yet. I'll never forget that. And then, in March 2021, Sheriff Polk made his announcement. He said he had completed the new investigation. He said his office had reviewed every piece of evidence, interviewed witnesses, reanalyzed footage, reviewed autopsies. And his conclusion? Accident. Again, positional asphyxia. No signs of foul play. The same verdict we'd been handed 8 years ago, tied up in a different colored bow. And just like that, the light dimmed again. The Johnsons didn't scream. Not this time. They stood in front of cameras, shoulders squared, faces blank. Jackie's voice didn't shake. "We know the truth," she said. "Even if they never write it on paper." I felt sick. like all the air had been sucked out of the room, like the universe had just flipped us the finger. After everything, the second autopsy, the missing organs, the corrupted footage, the endless inconsistencies, we were back at square one. Worse than square one, because now they could say, we looked again. Now they had an answer stamped with double authority. Case closed. But I knew better. We all did. That Jim Matt didn't just kill Kendrick. It killed trust. It killed the illusion that if you just do everything right, stay in school, run track, be kind, show up, you'll be safe. That the truth, eventually, will rise to the surface like oil in water. But sometimes, the truth drowns. Especially when people are paid to hold it down. Chapter 5, Echoes in the Mat. People think grief has a finish line. They treat it like a marathon, like if you just keep going, if you keep crying and screaming and begging long enough, eventually someone waves a flag and says, you made it. You're done now. You can go back to being normal. But that's the lie. The real truth is darker. Grief doesn't end. It just becomes the house you live in. You hang your pictures on its walls. You sleep beneath its roof. You learn how to breathe in its cold, echoing rooms. And if you're lucky, if you fight like hell, sometimes you find a window. Sometimes you find a way to let a little light back in. But that light never reaches the basement. And Kendrick Johnson still lives there. Even now, years later, his name still rattles through my bones like unfinished thunder. His story is still inked across every protest sign, whispered in every conversation about justice, carved into the conscience of anyone who dared to truly see what was done to him. But not everyone wanted to see. They wanted to believe the case was over, that a boy climbing into a mat for his shoe and never making it out made sense. They clung to that explanation like a life raft. Because the alternative? The possibility that a 17-year-old was murdered, that a school covered it up, that law enforcement helped bury the truth. That's too big, too ugly. That kind of evil makes people question everything they trust. So they folded the truth up like a gym mat and shoved it in a corner. But Kendrick's parents never did. And neither did I. I kept every article, every tweet, every legal filing, every viral video and Reddit thread that tried to piece together the mystery. It became my obsession, my responsibility. I couldn't let go, even when everyone else had. One night, I drove back to the school. It was late. After midnight, the parking lot was empty, just a few flickering streetlights buzzing like angry bees. I stood outside the gym, staring at the locked doors. I'd walked through them 100 times when I was a student, but now they looked different, like a tomb. I closed my eyes and tried to imagine what it was like for Kendrick that day. Did he know? Did he sense danger? Did he feel the cold edge of betrayal as he was struck, as he was stuffed into that mat like garbage, left to die in the dark while life carried on just outside? I pressed my hand to the door and whispered, I'm sorry. Not because I killed him, but because I didn't protect him. Because none of us did. We were all complicit in some small, quiet way. We saw things, strange glances, unanswered questions, sudden silences, and we didn't push hard enough. We didn't burn the house down when they told us the cameras glitched. We didn't riot when they replaced his organs with newspaper. We marched, yes. We posted. We prayed. But we let them win. And that's what's kept me up every night since. It's easy to call it an accident when the victim's gone. It's easy to rewrite the story when no one in power is willing to read it honestly. And it's terrifyingly easy to disappear a black boy in plain sight when the system has already decided his life was disposable. You want to know the part that guts me most? It's not just that Kendrick was killed. It's that somewhere out there walking around right now is someone who knows. Someone who was there. Someone who heard it. Saw it. Maybe even did it. And they've gone on with their life. They've had birthdays, vacations, new jobs, laughed at parties, posted selfies, moved on. Meanwhile, Kendrick's family has been stuck in January 11th, 2013, for over a decade. Frozen. And that, to me, is the most violent thing of all. But even frozen time cracks eventually. And in that space, in that crack, there's something growing. A movement. A memory. A refusal. Because the truth has a pulse. It doesn't die even when buried. It lives in people like Jackie Johnson, who wakes up every morning and says her son's name out loud so the world can't forget. It lives in people like me, who write and speak and rage until our throats are raw. It lives in kids watching from their phones, learning that silence kills, but voices resurrect. That's the part they couldn't erase. Kendrick became more than a case file. He became a question, a mirror, a fire. When the Department of Justice closed the investigation with no criminal charges, It was like watching someone throw dirt on a wound that never stopped bleeding. But the Johnsons didn't give them the satisfaction of silence. Jackie said, "If we have to keep fighting for 30 more years, we will." And I believe her, because this isn't about courtrooms anymore. It's about consciousness. It's about what we choose to carry forward. And I choose to carry Kendrick. I choose to say his name. I choose to remember that behind every closed case are the ones who never closed the casket. I choose to believe that sometimes, even if justice never comes with handcuffs or headlines, there is power in remembering, in refusing to shut up, in telling the truth again and again until the echo shakes loose the silence. So this story, it's not over. Because Kendrick Johnson didn't die in vain. He became a symbol, not a martyr, not a myth, a mirror. A mirror that forces us to ask, what kind of country lets a child die like that? And what kind of people let it happen twice?